Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. Welcome to the Top Chef Wrap Up Podcast. My name is Haley Strong, and we're here to talk about the premiere. And gosh, I can't do this alone. I mean, I would if I could, but I can't. They won't let me do that kind of thing anymore around here. So I'm joined by an excellent panel of judges. First up, we have the number one fan of fennel, Kurt Clark.
Hey there, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Next, we have the Kentucky King, Antonio Mazzaro, making his first appearance of the season.
Happy to be here. Thank you, Haley. Underreported. I like fennel.
Oh.
Of course, we have our favorite bread babe, Emily Fox.
Hey, hey, how are you?
And then Josh is here, too.
I'm here.
Hey, Josh.
Hey.
I'm just here.
I don't have a title. Prince of Pizza.
I thought you could come up with your own title.
I just did. Prince of Pizza. Prince of Pizza.
I like it. I like it. I don't have a title. I'm just the lowly, I don't know, host Haley.
Host Haley is good. Host Haley is here.
I hate it, but no
Mixed Master Mike this week. He must have some reason. We're all quarantined, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, who has better things to do than this?
You have to have a really good reason to not be on a podcast right now.
Yeah, I faced that three times this week. I can't make it because...
It's really testing our excuse generation abilities. It's definitely a trying time. We're not going to be able to get out of anything anymore.
Full commitment.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
And that's not the only thing that's committed. We have 15 people committed to being on Top Chef All Stars.
I know.
Nice one.
Thank you. I'm here all week.
And that's the show. Thank you so much for coming.
I'm really good at this. Can you tell?
Although 14 now with a wisp of the stash, there goes Joe Sast. It's a real heartbreaker for the house this week with the premiere.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. I don't know who I expected to go home first. I don't think that's even something that crossed my mind that any of these people would be going home. I think I just assumed that all 15 would make it to the end. Yeah, but to see Joe go first, I was really surprised and a little sad, but not as sad as I would have been with some people.
Yeah, even with Leanne, who he was up against, in that moment where, the bottom three are Leanne, Joe, and Brian Malarkey, who, if you listened to the Top Chef preview podcast, was almost my team, if not for the fact that I bullied Kurt Clark into taking Brian Malarkey so he would have a Brianini sandwich as his team. That could have been the whole house, the whole team Wiggler on the bottom. And when it was very clear that it was going to be between Leanne and Joe and I was losing somebody, I wanted it to be Joe. I would have been heartbroken to lose Leanne as the first one. As I know, Uncle Tonio, you are you probably would have been raging about that as well, given Leanne's story on the most recent appearance of Top Chef that she had had.
Definitely. She deserved a better shake. That said, both Leanne and Joe were bottom in the quickfire and bottom in the elimination challenge. So it would have felt tragic in a way because of the way her story ended in Denver, but it also wouldn't have felt not deserved. I mean, it would have felt very deserved considering what we saw. Hopefully she can get her head back in the game from this. I think starting out poorly on the quickfire really hurt both of these two chefs. And obviously everyone in the season is super talented. So it's going to be rough every time we lose somebody.
Yeah, I think especially with these kind of in the these two in the bottom two and me with my goldfish memory of past seasons, they're still fresh. I still remember these two. And even then, I'll always remember Leanne, even if she hadn't been recently on Last Chance Kitchen a few seasons back. But I think that was even the harder part was that they're people who are still relatively fresh in my mind. So I was like, wait, someone's going already that I recognize?
Yeah, it was a great premiere though. I mean, I really enjoyed these opening challenges. I thought it was maybe I'd love to get everybody's take on, did it feel like we were just really thrown into the action too quickly? Was there not enough foreplay in the lead up to the episode where we just sort of start at the observatory?
Absolutely.
There's no epic walk through Angkor Wat. What's the Cambodian temple for the returning all stars or something like that?
Yeah, they could have a beautiful walk through the observatory.
Yeah.
The parking lot leads up to there.
There wasn't a lot of ceremony. It was almost like, okay, who went home in 16th place? I don't remember. So let's just start with this episode.
Yeah, they should have solved the Black Dahlia murder first.
Or like they could have done like a Guatemala-esque hike up the hill to the Griffith Observatory and then had to like do the challenge.
They had to climb the Hollywood sign.
Yeah.
Or I think like Leanne would have quit
to get there.
Yeah. Altitude poisoning once again. It's no good.
There's actually a funny story about the Griffith Park Observatory and the Hollywood sign that was recently on the 99% Invisible podcast, where people that live in the neighborhood, for people using the trail to get to the Hollywood sign to actually hike up there, their lives used to be fine. And then YouTube happened and influencers happened and people started making videos about this is exactly how you hike to the Hollywood sign. So then their neighborhood became a nightmare. And they actually petitioned Google and other mapping services to not include, if you search like Hollywood sign, their neighborhood in the trailhead. And they switched it to the Griffith Park Observatory as the official location. And if you look at the Griffith Park Observatory, you can see in the scenes the Hollywood sign in the background. And it's pretty damn small. So it's hilarious that
a couple of years ago when I was in LA, we went up to the Griffith Observatory and I took a picture of the Hollywood sign in the distance and it was in the distance. Yeah. So that's pretty wild. Yeah. That's a long hike.
Yeah. But they start there. I mean, it's iconic LA iconography. Let's just use the word twice. Sure. I'll say it again. Iconic iconography.
You say that five times fast.
I'm not going
practice
to
practice that during the quarantine.
No, I'm not going to do that. But they start with the mise en place and everything. And I feel I like that it was like a good reintroduction of where everybody is at in their careers, even, right? Of like, who's going to be strong at this? Who's still like pretty fresh in this department versus like who's just a restaurateur and hasn't had to get their hands dirty. Wow.
I like the fact that we're sort of revisiting people that are known quantities, like Angelo, for example, who was always like super cocky, right? And then he's like, oh, wait, I have a softer side. Here's my son. Like, let's talk about how I used to be, you know, a completely different person, but I've really mellowed out. And like, I'm doing this as a father and somebody who, you know, really has perfected his craft, but cares more about other people. You know, there are certain storylines that I really appreciate sort of picking back up again that I haven't thought about necessarily. So I really enjoyed that.
Right. And we talked a little bit last week about, you know, do we think that Angelo is going to kind of be getting the John Tesar treatment in terms of, you know, kind of a shift in his approach. And I think we kind of got a little bit of that with this. We got the softer side, the family man, and, you know, somebody who might have had their edge dulled a little bit, but the sharpness isn't necessarily there, but they're now maybe not a knife so much as there's some other less sharp implement.
Or just an unsharpened knife.
A spoon.
Yeah, there's a spoon. A spoon is still useful as a spoon, but an unsharpened knife is then the kind of like useless.
That's dangerous, actually.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Yeah, I trust you. I think a spoon is a spoon. A dull knife is just useless. So he's turned from a knife into a little bit of a spoon. Well, I don't know where. Okay, just rescue me from this metaphor.
I think you're having a great time with it.
Yeah,
I think I do. I'll let you go.
We go to someone like Lisa, who is from one of the earliest seasons. I frankly had to look her up because I was like, don't remember you off the top of my head. And then I was like, oh my God, yeah, you were a pretty, you played a pretty pivotal role in season 4, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about going from a knife to maybe a spork. Like, she's got a little bit of like an edge still, but she also was like, I've matured a lot. Like, I've come and like worked my way up, and here I am to compete again and like watch out, everyone.
Antonio, you have Lisa on your team, if I'm remembering correctly, from the auto draft. So two pronged question, two of the prongs of the spork. is A, how are you feeling about your team, and B, how are you feeling specifically about Lisa being back?
I thought it was good episode for Lisa, for sure. We saw the flashback to her having some beef with Dale, and just her attitude has changed. She took being picked last in stride. She delivered a good dish in the elimination challenge. So thumbs up for Lisa, for sure. It was interesting to me that when Tom, in what very little foreplay they had, the little pecks on the cheek that were happening before the mise en place relay, Tom said...
I missed that. I must have fast-forwarded through
Tom
that.
Tom said, you missed the best part. Tom said, which of you would never do this again? And there were only like three people who raised their hands. Tom said, which of you have said you would never do this again? And only Stephanie, Jamie, and Joe Sasto didn't raise their hands. So Lisa was not one of those people. She must have had at some point some negative experiences associated with her Top Chef time. But it seems like she's put that behind her.
I just rewatched that season this week, and I feel like she did have a pretty harsh edit. And, you know, obviously she said those things, but they really played her up to be a big complainer. And this was when they used to have reunions. And that was a point in the reunion was like, she told this story about how someone came up to her and, like, you know, was a big fan of the show, but like because of what she had seen on the TV, she didn't know if she'd be nice or not. And I feel like that was probably not the only instance of that happening to Lisa. So I could understand why she wouldn't want to come back to this shit show. Like, she had a rough go around the first time. And I don't think she really got a lot of credit. A lot of people remember that final of being Stephanie, Lisa, and Richard. But I would say Richard came third in that. Like, he blew that final. So, you know.
And that was, like, pretty clear, right? Yeah, like, he was the front runner.
Very much so.
And, like, there was, like, no dancing around that at all. That, like, Blaze just bungled.
There's no liquid nitrogen to cover that up.
Yeah. Lisa genuinely almost won that season. Like, it was pretty close at that final dinner. Like, Stephanie just edged her out. And I don't think people who haven't seen that season in a while would remember that.
Yeah,
like she wasn't a contender throughout the season, but she was at the end.
Well, it's interesting in terms of like that sliding doors component to it, because Antonio, you ended up with Lisa as the last person on your team. And I think we spent a lot of the preview show being like, oh, Lisa, like once we got her, like, who is like, really? And we're talking about like a universe where, you know, Stephanie Izard is like a really, you know, well-known chef. You know, the Girl and the Goat in Chicago is like one of the great restaurants in America. Hopefully, knock on wood, that gets to continue. You know, what is the world where Lisa Fernandez is the winner of that season? Like, what does the restaurant history look like from there? And I think as we were talking about, like, who has some of the best redemption stories potentially on the table, as we're reminded of like this history. And I think that the episode did a pretty good job of rearticulating that history. I think the deck is set for Lisa to maybe have a very different story.
I didn't expect we'd spend this much time at the top of the episode talking about Lisa, but my reasoning and putting her where I put her on the list was just that I don't think they would bring her back to this All-Stars loaded version of this season unless they know that she was really going to bring something to the table and they were interested in seeing a story like that come back. So we're right there, certainly in this episode. And I think as you guys are observing, we're getting that about a lot of different chefs and we're getting a lot of it right from the top. I laughed a lot at one of my other team members, Kevin, talking about PFTS. He's maybe not the best place to turn these artichokes because he has people for that shit.
Yeah, that was really funny. He was great. He was great this episode. I was very worried for him at the elimination challenge. It seemed like everyone was just like, oh, well, that looks great, but it's just kind of a bowl of shit. Like, they didn't seem to be so pumped about what he'd put out there. And I was very worried both for you, Antonio, because I know you're a big Kevin guy, but for all of us, because I thought that he really provided a lot of entertainment throughout the episode.
Yeah, I think not to like jump too far ahead, but I think it was interesting during the, you know, once we determined who the bottom team was and who kind of like the bottom two probably were, you know, that didn't keep people from who are standing off to the side safe from some of the judges' comments. It's like, we hear our bottom two, but then Tom's like, Angelo, Kevin, I still have to call you out for some stuff.
So yeah, I thought that was completely fair, and I'm glad Tom did that, because I do feel like those people need to know the constructive criticism that the judges have for them. And I feel that way about Drag Race too. Like, I want everyone to be judged because I want everyone to know what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong. And so I really appreciated that Tom did say, hey guys, like, you guys effed up too. Like, you're lucky you had some great team members because could have been you.
Should they apply that to Survivor as well? Like, after somebody gets voted out, Probst is like, all right, before you go, Wendell, you were too mean this week. Michelle, you need to be less wishy-washy. Like, should like Jeff really be able to insert himself in the...
I think he inserts himself a lot, doesn't he?
I think so too.
He's already doing that.
Yeah, he's got that on. It's funny. So I got to interview Chef Colicchio for the
one of the sexiest chefs week. According to that competition.
I believe, and I buy it. I buy it. No, it was great. It was great to talk to Tom in the midst of everything going on, and I thought that he had some really thoughtful things to say about where we are culturally right now in the midst of all things coronavirus. I know we don't want to dwell on it too much. But what we did also manage to find a way to talk about Top Chef, the reason we were actually supposed to get on the phone. And he had said, like, the thing about Top Chef is when you have a new lineup of contestants, it's pretty easy to just really judge them based on what's going on the show. You don't have rapport with them. You don't know them very well. But with an all-star season, it can be a little difficult to be more brutally honest. And we just had to keep the conversation going. But I did want to be like, Tom, you kind of gave the sass to some of these people in this episode. So I appreciated that where even with Sasta, it was clearly going south for him throughout the episode. Where they're like, oh, Joe's back. It's like we never left. He's making pasta again.
And
he's
in 5.5 minutes for some reason.
Exactly. So I appreciated that. It didn't seem like they were pulling their punches, at least in the edit. I thought that the way that they were treating everybody felt pretty, pretty fair. And I'm fully on board with what you guys are saying. I think getting a chance to it's not even sniping at people who aren't in the bottom three. The rules of the game are if you're on a team and it's a team-based challenge and the people who are the losing team are going to be the people who are up for elimination. But that shouldn't mean that the people who sucked on other teams that are not up for elimination shouldn't get some broadsides as well.
Exactly. And I kind of started getting the feeling that from just that sense of familiarity, some of the Colicchio sass that we typically only get in Last Chance Kitchen is creeping its way into the show proper. And I don't necessarily hate that. I like the fact that there's a little bit more of that familiarity. We don't have to sit through a few early rounds of I'm still trying to figure out who you are through your cooking. It's like these chefs are kind of known. So I think that's going to be potentially allow other things to shine through. I still would have liked an initial quick fire or initial elimination challenge to do something again that highlighted who this person is as a chef. That's something we've kind of complained about in past seasons, that not necessarily happening as early as we'd like. But I definitely would think I would have liked that. I did appreciate the extent to which they used flashbacks to aid somebody with my memory skills.
me as well. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was really nice, though. So the only thing that bugged me was, am I the only person who noticed the change in the font of the
Chiron? No, I noticed.
That was bugging me so much. every time I would pause the show to capture the name of the dish, I'd be like, this font is
yeah,
this
it,
font
it
is
was
just
weird
grating
that they,
on me.
They started subtitling everything in Comic Sans.
Wingdings.
Yeah, it's a very strange choice.
Comic Sans. Yeah.
But thank you, Antonio. I'm glad that you noticed as well.
I noticed it right away and I thought, oh, Top Chef trying to be slick here, updating their look. I'm not sure that I felt like a refresh was needed, but it definitely jumped out for sure because certain things become iconic, right? They become associated with the show. You're used to a show using a certain type of style or font, and it's interesting when they change it. But Top Chef has always experimented and looked to branch out. One of the things, Josh, from your interview that stood out to me in that regard, and I went ahead and checked it out, is there's now a Tom Colicchio web show, more companion content.
What would Tom do? So you watch it. I watched it too.
Yeah, he's playing grab ass and making oysters.
that's really what's happening. Yeah. If you're not aware of it, so there's a new digital series all season called What Would Tom Do, where Tom is taking one of the challenges from the episode for a spin, and he's giving you all of the sticking points and the warnings right up front, where he's like, I'm not doing it at the same time. The circumstances are different. We're here in a kitchen. I'm not at the beach. he just wants to really get ahead. It's literally, there's 30 seconds of the show, of the 5.5 minute show, is devoted to curtailing all of the internet hate that he knows that he's going to get.
That's going to be effective.
He's co-hosting it with Nilu from last season, and they have a really fun dynamic where they're just sloshing rosé all the way through. Antonio, now that I know that you watched it, I was going to ask you if you were triggered by the way Nilu seemingly was saying oysters instead of oysters.
Right?
It sounded like she was saying oysters. Last season they were saying oysters and that lady won, so.
A little bit.
I don't even remember what her name was. I'm so sorry.
How dare you?
But yeah, you should watch it. It was a fun episode. They break the fourth wall and there's camera people all over the place and people are just snipping and grabbing clams to go. It's a little bit pandemonium. It's really funny. They're sniping and taking clams to go. I will say it again. Not five times fast.
So that's going to be a regular. I wasn't sure if that was because there's no Last Chance Kitchen. I didn't know if that was a one off, but that's going to be a season long thing.
Yeah, I think.
Okay, cool. I'll check it out.
It was fun. It was really, really fun. And Tom and Nilu have a funny dynamic, but they both seemed like halfway to wasted.
Not good.
That's my favorite kind of content.
It was good. It was good content.
Versus all the way to wasted. That's even better.
Well, like when you're all the way to wasted, you don't always have that nice through line going. Kind of like us. Like you'd be listening to this thinking that we're all the way wasted, but it's 11 a.m. Like we're fine. We're all have like mugs
we're
in
fine.
Our hand. What's in everyone's mug? Like,
speak for yourself.
I believe that's not a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quarantine, baby. It's no rules.
Yeah. Free for all Top Chef podcast. Stick a fork in it. We'll be right back after these messages. And take that fork right out because we're back. I don't know. Where do we want to go next?
We can talk about the mise en place relay race.
Let's do that.
All right, let's do that.
This is pretty traditional, right?
It felt a little different because once five people were finished around, they got to go to the kitchen and start on the quick fire challenge. And then they had to use the ingredient they prepared. I don't know if that was mentioned in the show, but it's something I picked up when they were presenting the dishes.
I thought it was going to be just the one that they prepared, but they all had artichokes in. So I think they each had to use all three ingredients,
to use all three. I thought they just had to use what they had prepared.
That's what I had thought.
It didn't
as well.
Seem like the first people used orange, like the first team used orange or almonds. It didn't seem like the second people used almonds.
Yeah, everybody used artichokes. The green team, the last
because everyone
team
worked
used oranges,
on artichokes.
So.
Yeah, that was the starter. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. That doesn't matter. So the first thing was to turn artichokes, then supreme some oranges, then crack some almonds. I know personally, I wouldn't be able to do any of that. I would probably cut my hand off and have to go to the hospital and get medevaced immediately.
Fox, as the chef of the crew, how difficult was all this?
I would call myself the cook, not the chef.
Okay, well, we're going to call you a chef and make you
I don't know how to do the artichoke thing. We actually had a class a couple weeks ago where we tried to teach people how to do it, and that was not very successful. I have supremed citrus before. It's actually pretty easy once you get the hang of it, but it does take a little practice. And then cracking any kind of nut other than a walnut, I have not done before, or like a cashew.
Yeah, to do that, 20 almonds.
Pistachio.
They all seemed really scared to do the almonds, but then I thought that the show just kind of yada yada through the fear. They just sort of like suddenly like people just had like it's like, oh, we're running out of time. We don't have time to do the fear montage of the and now calling it a fear montage. I'm just thinking Mark cracking almonds.
Yeah, they were on a roller coaster. I did laugh rewatching the episode because they did have the fear montage about how people were going to crack the almonds. And Jen Carroll is the last talking head in there. And she says, hopefully I won't get to the almonds. And of course, she was the last person there. So that was really
that was
really
completely expected. When I heard that talking head, I was like, sorry, Jen, you're doing almonds.
God bless her for trying to use what was it? The wine key or the I was like, you know, yeah, nice. Everyone, I think lots of people were using the flat of the knife to try to crack it, like you might say a clove of garlic. Good on them. None of them had nutcrackers. They had to improvise.
I'd probably give up and just use my teeth at a certain point, honestly.
Just try to teeth them open. Yeah.
I think
it's not
all,
very sanitary, but it gets the job done.
Oh, did anyone ask me to be sanitary in this challenge? May not. No, it's just to get it done fastest.
It's a quick fire, not a clean fire. I think we all love the mise en place relay. We've talked about it a lot on this podcast in the past. Do you think, though, because one of the key things that's happening with the artichokes, especially, is Brian Voltaggio just can't stop saying check. Do we need to add a penalty of some sort for premature checks?
Yeah, yes. I was wondering if it was because like he was just very nervous and he was trying to leave the competition. So he's like, check, please. That's just sort of what I was thinking.
Like he was asking for the bill.
Yeah, he wanted to go.
All of the soup.
Yeah, he was done.
Yeah, Leanne was not having the premature checks. She was like, no. And Jen was not happy either.
I do wonder if that is worth implementing, because I think otherwise maybe you can, like, does everybody have to pause down during a check?
Yeah. Everyone stands back and puts their hands up. And,
is there a strategic utility to the unchecked check? Right. Like, can you, like, if you're causing everybody to stop down, if you're really tired and you get to catch your breath, I don't know.
That's not what
I don't know how to. I don't know how to game the thing. But what's
like,
the
you're getting tired within 30 check? Seconds. Like, yeah. These don't last long.
Yeah.
Here's what you do. I'm going to implement. There's an escape room solution to this, as there is for everything.
Yeah.
I've done escape rooms where you can ask for a hint, but then you have to wait, 5 or 10 minutes before you actually ask for another one. So implement some sort of rule is where you ask for the check. You have to wait, probably in this case, maybe I'd say 30 seconds to a minute would be reasonable, just given like what they were had to do with this particular task. So that's, I think, potentially a solution there. But you know what? It would have been less amusing if they hadn't instituted that. So I'm not upset.
Amuse-bouching, if you
yes.
I see.
Hey, did you guys know that Jamie gave up his immunity?
I'd heard a rumor.
Did you know that Brian lost to his brother?
Yeah.
These are, in fact, not underreported things.
No, they are not.
Yeah. But we do hit a lot of these highlights from people's seasons in the, I thought, are really pretty well edited in terms of how we sampled throughout people's stories while they're doing the mise en place, while they're doing the relay and seeing all that. And we get a lot of introductions, I think we're seeing from an edit standpoint. Stephanie and Nini are being presented as feeling like underdogs, that they maybe feel like they have they're going to be underestimated in the competition for various reasons, maybe in terms of the time of their careers or just what they were like on the season. So we see these clear stories starting to emerge, as we talked about with Brian and Jamie, that's coming out as well. And we have Jen Carroll's very memorable interaction with Tom at the judges table and all stars right. So she could she does, though, and this is something we got tweets about, she does refer to her last time on the show as All Stars, seemingly saying that her appearance on Top Chef Last Chance Kitchen is not canon. I know you all are probably thrilled with this.
Yeah,
that was a webisode, not a show.
My last appearance on the webisode didn't go so well. Yeah, it just doesn't roll off the tongue. But yeah, exactly. So she does not even acknowledge.
Can you acknowledge it? Can you remind me? Because I would have said that the last time we'd seen Jen Carroll was on All Stars previous, but she was on Last Chance Kitchen.
Yeah,
we get it, Josh. You don't watch Last Chance Kitchen. Last Chance Kitchen.
Catch me up. I'm gonna watch Last Chance Kitchen this season. I have no choice. None of us have any choices anymore. So I'm watching LCK. But wait, did she?
So Marcel and Lee. Catch. Correct me.
You're right. You're on it.
Yeah, you're on it.
It was Marcel. It was Jen. Brother.
No, he was on the
wrong season.
I think it might have just been.
It was Brother's season. It was Top Chef Denver.
Oh, yeah. Leanne.
Yes, it was Leanne and Kwame.
Oh, Kwame, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they started, instead of having to wait for Last Chance Kitchen to populate. Oh God! Instead of having to wait for it to populate with chefs in the game, they started it out with 4 alumni. And was it Jen or was it Marcel who was the very first person to be eliminated from Last Chance Kitchen? I can't remember.
I think it was Jen.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, it didn't go well there, but I'm glad she's back. And as much as I was saying before that I kind of miss the let's kick off the first episode with a dish that tells us about you, I do think at least the mise en place relay is a good opportunity to kind of push the action into the background and to use that same time to talk a little bit more about the chef's history on the show. So I think it was a good use of the time now that I think about it.
Josh, I have a question for you since you hate Last Chance Kitchen so much, but there are people on this season who you would have liked to have seen. Would you have been okay if we did that again with Last Chance Kitchen, starting with 4 people who weren't on the main show, but let's say Marjorie was on there, for example. I know you're going to say, just put her on the main show.
Yeah, why are you asking the question then?
Because if you could not do that and you had to, I mean, would you rather have that than nothing at all?
Yeah, because then at least we can get Marjorie in here. No, 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 I wouldn't. I wouldn't. Okay.
All right, it's fair. I think especially in an all-star season, it's asking an awful lot. When
just throw them in.
When you're dealing with Top Chef Denver and you're telling these four people, hey, you don't actually have to show up to all the pre-stuff. You don't have to do all this. We're going to run all these last chance kitchens real quick. You can take a break. And if you get back into the competition, then you're going to need however much time after that. Fine. That's maybe an easier solution than asking these people to do that for an all-star season. It just doesn't seem as fair in that realm. And I'm not sure that they're going to continue to do. They haven't done so, I think, right going forward. We're not going to do that every single time. We have done it in other seasons, though, where we've brought in returning players. We did it, obviously, with Jim and Carrie and others in the past. So it's something that I think they will do. But it makes sense to me why they didn't do it here.
I'm kind of enjoying the fact that we're doing this a little bit as a free for all. And in the spirit of that, maybe it'd be fun to go around the horn and like have everybody like throw out the name of a person that really surprised them in this episode. Maybe someone we haven't talked about yet. And since I'm throwing out the idea, I'll go first. And Antonio, you had said in your draft assessment that you had sent to me, I'm paraphrasing right now, that Melissa would be somebody who you could imagine would go really, really far, but would probably say the least. And I thought we actually got a really good amount of screen time from Melissa, and was somebody who I really, really enjoyed in this episode. I think that she like popped in this one episode of All Stars in a way that she'd never really did in Boston.
She's a Libra queen, Josh. That's and we right. stand
our Libra queen.
Queen.
Here.
Yes. Haley and I definitely stand a Libra queen. So that sort of content, very interesting to get from Melissa outside really of anything other than just giving her more from a personal standpoint that we really didn't get as much from her in the past or until she got much later into her season. So very interesting that she stepped up and she certainly stood out in terms of the dishes that she cooked. So that I think a really good one to highlight. Emily, who stood out for you?
I was really pleasantly surprised to watch Brian Voltaggio again. Like he doesn't.
Oh, I'm pleasantly surprised to watch Brian Voltaggio again.
Like I was just like, don't get it. Like especially when they were like, "Oh, looks like you got a little color on the beach." And I was like, "Yeah, I did."
He's very uncomfortable. He's very awkward.
No, but I kind of love that about him.
It's cute.
Like he's like, "Me and my brother are very competitive. I jumped out of a plane, then he went and did it afterwards." But it was nice to see. I don't know. He's sort of an OG in a lot of ways, but like strangely likable to me. So even though he's like very matter of fact. So I'm excited to see where he goes with everything. And it's cool that like, you know, he supports Eric, who's on my team and was sort of a mentor for him. So I agree with Eric and what he said about, you know, them competing against one another, what that's going to be like.
That was a storyline that surprised me because I'd forgotten that completely. And I think that that's a cool dynamic to have on the show is the teacher and his student in the ring together. I think it'd be really, really fun.
Was it surprising to anyone else that was Brian's first quickfire win? I know people will be angry that we didn't really that jumped out, but it certainly was surprising to me that it was his first quickfire win. And then I remembered he was on a season with Michael Voltaggio, Kevin, and Jen Carroll. So that is just a loaded season where it's not surprising that he didn't necessarily win a quick fire, but he certainly jumped out here. He and Kevin made a dish that I think really popped for the judges with what they did in the quick fire. That even though Sasso's pasta was dry and there were some issues there, which Emily, I have another question just from a prep standpoint. Is there ever any world where that Sasso pasta would have been good? Doesn't it fundamentally have to rest for it to be delivered in a certain kind of way for it?
That's just like overwhelming chutzpah on his part. You know, like you need to actually let pasta rest.
I think we found the hashtag for the episode.
I think the only time that we've ever seen a successful thing, and I'm kind of like crossing streams here, but like Michael Chiarello years ago on, what was it?
Iron Chef. Like the next Iron
like
Chef.
That, made pasta. And everyone was like, risky move. But Chiarello knows what he's doing. And he pulls it off. And it's like the only time I've ever seen anybody in a competition setting kind of like this, where like he managed to like nail it. So like Sasso coming in, I don't know if he's Chiarello levels. Clearly, you know, he
first
got
one out.
Kicked
I'd
off.
Say no.
Yeah. But just I don't know why you would do that as like your initial like thought without being like, hold on, do we actually have enough time?
It was surprising because I think what the fundamental construction of the quickfire meant that this red team came in. They had no idea how long it would take the other teams to come in. So there was no clock on the wall when they walked into that kitchen. They thought maybe we could have an hour, maybe we could have 20 minutes. I don't think they knew, but it just seemed like once they see the blue team come in and they realize, oh, they're only 5 minutes behind us. Yeah. So that probably means the team's only going to be 5 minutes behind them, depending on how long it takes to break those nuts open, baby. Then I don't know. I don't know why he still went through with it. I mean, there's really not a lot of time to pivot, but you just, the laws of science and nature aren't going to change by virtue of them being in the Top Chef kitchen.
Yeah, I agree completely.
But wouldn't that be cool?
It would be cool. Yeah. Put it up, pitch it to like Disney Plus, Josh.
If they Padma had, has that power.
Yeah, like a full insulated kitchen that is just like operating on a rule system totally separate from reality. That'd be dope. Next season, please. Yeah. Top Chef alternate universe.
Haley, who jumped out to you that we haven't highlighted yet, or is somebody that you want to talk about that we haven't spent time with? Is it going to be NeNe?
No, it's not. Although I think NeNe had a pretty incredible episode. 10 out of 10 on her jumpsuit. I love NeNe. I love having her there. She just brings this beautiful brightness to the show that I just don't think we get a lot. But no, the person I want to highlight is somebody who I love. But I forgot how much I loved her, and that's Stephanie. She had a pretty incredible episode. You know, I completely understand her fear going into the competition because she doesn't have a restaurant. She's probably the only personal chef out there. And it's just a different style than a restaurant chef. You just don't move quite as quick. But Stephanie just held her own. And I love, like, I feel like I get her. I like, you know, the anxiety she has, she uses it to fuel her. And she just did super well. She played it cool. She did a great job. I love her. I hope she goes super far.
She also brought back the ghost of Nick by that flashback. And I was just like, oh,
dragging your boy, God, Curtis Clark,
this freaking guy.
Oh yeah.
Sorry,
were you triggered by that, Kurt, or you're willing to
No, I hope that she does well and is vindicated so that people will leave Nick alone.
No, because if she's vindicated, then it'll be like, well, she should have won to begin with. Yeah. Nick screwed her over.
Yeah, there's no good thing.
Is he supposed to pull a Jamie and get the hate from that side of the No.
Like Melissa, I don't need Jamie.
Melissa even said, like, what was Jamie doing? Giving up? This is a game. So no. I think I'll be the Nick apologist. I think the person who surprised me, I will say that that's NeNe did surprise me on several fronts.
Could you tell us why? the Top Chef judges panel got some deleted content that won't make it onto the podcast over the week. That was some really blessed content that Kurt, perhaps you could paraphrase for us all.
So I was correct in that I did have NeNe on my draft team last season. And then I think the quick comment just in terms of like, you know, why I'm choosing at this moment to talk about her is it surprised me a little bit how timid she seemed at the beginning of this episode. But then I flashed back to last season. I remember she was kind of the same way then, but then she quickly accelerated into being like, just by episode two or three, much more forceful. And so I think she's just still finding her feet. And then that's what I anticipate for her. But I don't know if it's like the Top Chef version of the Mandela effect. It's like the Padma effect or something, but I legit thought that it was NeNe and Kelsey in the finale last
Amazing.
Season.
It was incredible.
And
she didn't even make the merge last season.
I know. Everybody on the podcast was like talking about she went out 12th, and I'm like, no, did 12th. Okay.
No, everybody else got their research wrong. I'm saying.
No. I was like,
I literally wrote notes and sent them to you.
I know.
I never write notes.
I remember reading the stuff about the dog named Tofu, but I don't remember the placement of.
I'm glad you got the important part.
No, exactly. I was like, I was more amused by like the peripheral stuff than the hard data, which is like the story of my life. But not something you want to hear from the tabulator. But yeah, that was something that I was like endlessly amused with myself by. But I still stand by my draft pick. She's a joy and a delight, and I'm hoping that she loses some of the first episode jitters and gets back to how she was just in the following couple episodes of her initial season.
He's not here, but Mike Bloom, he did text me the one take that he has from the episode, and it fits alongside what we're saying here. And I think it could be a good segue into talking about the elimination challenge. Is his only real take that he has for episode one is that Brian Mullarky, what an absolute hot mess, and I am so here for him this season. And I guess I got to issue a mea culpa because I just broad brushed Brian Mullarky as like, oh, he's just another one of Kurt's favorite boring white dudes. You should take him. You should put him on your team, Kurt, so that you have that. You have the double Brian's itch. Brian Mullarky, not boring at all. I guess I just have no memory of him on Top Chef whatsoever. He really is just kind of like a Tasmanian devil of disaster.
Well, he wasn't that disastrous.
No, but he's just like it's like a control freak. Like he's just like just like really, really wild and highly entertaining to watch.
I like his bunk bed commentary.
Yeah, exactly.
It is not fair to put these full grown adults in bunk beds anymore.
Oh, it's perfectly
fair. Why are we doing that still?
I sleep in a bunk bed and I live alone. So no, I'm kidding.
Damn, I wish that is some dark shit.
Yeah. I feel I need to like. I mean, even though this is audio, we are recording. We have cams. I feel like I almost need to like take my webcam into my room to prove that this is not the.
I'm not opposed as long as it doesn't ruin your internet.
I mean, Josh
connection.
And I have a full size bed and I have a trundle that I sleep in.
Yeah, and we sleep in the trundle. Yeah.
And it's like a sleepover every
night. Emily sleeps in the trundle. Emily sleeps in the trundle. I tuck her in. I say, you got everything you need? You got your water in the crevice underneath the bed? She says, yeah, I've got everything. I've got my book. I say, okay. And then I kiss her lightly on the forehead and then I push the trundle underneath the bed.
Like a little cocoon.
Yeah, and then... you know, she wakes up earlier than I do. So, she has to knock, after about 2 hours of being awake. And then I get up and I release her from the trundle.
You release her from the trundle.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
No, but I did think it was interesting that you know, Joe Sasso, obviously it seemed like he thought, well, I'm the team captain and I should be calling the shots. And yet, you know, here's Brian taking over everything. And I was like, well, you were kind of the draft leader. I don't know if you necessarily are the chef leader, but
yeah, but decorum probably dictates that Joe Sasso is the leader, and we should, even you and I, Kurt, with our Swiss cheese brains as it pertains to Top Chef history, I think we've watched enough to know that like the discordant team typically does not do well. There are exceptions to the rule, but like if there is difficulty at the leadership level, things are not going to go well.
And it was interesting to see. I don't think, did we see much, luckily, did we see much Discord this episode? I'm just thinking back. So I think it was luckily more technical issues that landed teams in trouble than team harmony issues. Would we say that's fair?
Yeah, it didn't feel tremendously contentious. If anything, I think all the teams were like, yeah, put out great food. And then later on, we're like, oh, maybe I see.
Yeah, they had a couple of lines from Brian, right? Where, or about Brian, where Leanne and Joe both had confessionals where they were like, well, we're starting to share some ideas. And Brian just kind of says, do this, do that, do this, do that. And both of those two, sort of remarked on it, but that did not seem to be a story, that they were presenting. Like the two people on his team struggled because of him. If anything, Brian's dish was really well, executed in some respects, and he was safe. And it didn't seem like his mistakes or his problems were the reason that the other two chefs had problems, even though that was slightly presented, at least on the show. But when it comes to Team Discord, the person that I think I just want to spare a couple words for, because I don't know if you guys know this, but, there were some Team Discord in a previous season and Jamie actually gave up his immunity. And went home for it.
Wait, what? Can you wait? What was
Hold
that?
On, rewind.
Yeah, no. Jamie gave up his immunity and went home for it because of some team Discord where he felt like he was the leader. He felt he should be responsible.
He had immunity at that time.
He had immunity at that time. He gave it up, which is crazy. I don't know why you would ever do that. And then he ended up going home for it. Reverse Nicholas, if you will. But the situation here, I think Jamie had a really good episode. He picked really well, and I love his line. After they won, he basically said, I'm so glad I picked you guys. And it was really genuine and I thought very charming. And he stood out. He had this idea for a sauce for his mussels to put some of the actual char from The embers, they're in the sauce. That was really well received. Muscles were a little dry, but, you know, so are mine when I wake up in the morning. So we're all good. But other than that, you know, I thought a pretty good episode for Jamie. This first episode had some good content. And another person I think picked near the end of drafts, probably across the country, people doing these Top Chef drafts, probably had Jamie along with Melissa and along with Lisa and along with Stephanie a little lower on their boards. And I think a good episode in different ways for all of those people. Very good, I think, start to this season across the board. I think we're getting content from everybody out there, which is really hard to do with 15 massive talents on the show. Yeah. And finding a little way to have each of them stand out in their own way. Well-executed premiere for sure.
Yeah, I think actually, like, if someone was not maybe like the least represented person in the episode for me was Joe Sasto.
Yeah. Like, I would agree with that. Yeah, you know? I feel like for somebody's food episode, we didn't get much from him.
So that's interesting. It's, maybe they're like, well, we're losing the stash, so let's just shave that off.
Should we full?
Is that a Mario? Oh, it's a Mario death. Oh my god! So,
should we full on transition to talking about the elimination challenge? We've kind of been hinting at it.
Let's do it.
So the winning team from the quickfire, the red team, each of those five got to, you know, handpick their team of three, and Lisa was the last picked, and like I think. And Tony, you said that she wasn't salty at all. Or maybe Emily, sorry, goldfish brain already. And so I think the big twist here, they had to do a progressive three-course meal on the beach using only fire is the only implement, which really pleased Angelo.
Fire represents their life in this challenge.
That's a different show.
Was it Brian or Angelo that was most? I know Brian says he has what the Urban Wood is one of his restaurants, and he doesn't like electricity.
Malarkey is a big fan of the fire. He was super psyched. I think that was a big part of why he took such a stranglehold over the team with him and with Sasto and Leanne.
Oh, impressive. stranglehold.
I think I meant stronghold. I don't know.
What?
Yeah, Haley Stronghold. But I liked the challenge. I thought it was great. Yeah. Take him to the beach, you know, the show off the great expanse of Los Angeles. You start at the tip of top, Griffith Observatory, the observatory, and then go out, go further west to the Pacific Ocean and show us that sweet, sweet, sweet beach life. It was fun. The land and sea and a little bit of air as well. G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe's has to.
Can you get some highway numbers in there, Josh?
Can somebody help me out here, please?
The 10. They probably took the 10 into. Yeah. Yeah.
The 1 definitely goes along the coast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Joe?
Yeah.
Greg? It was good. It was a good challenge. I liked it. Why did you think it was a good idea to make flatbread, buddy?
Oh,
it's just not
so much ale. This is Top Chef, not Top Flatbread.
That's a different show coming to BravoTV.com.
That I would sign up for.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad at it.
It just seemed, I agree with you. Flatbread seems a little like basic for what's going on here.
Especially when it's like this, like it's just they're saying like, yeah, it's open fire and that's like what you're cooking with. But also this is a seafood challenge. Yeah. When you have flatbread can be a vehicle for seafood. But like, man, it's gotta be good. And you're talking to the Prince of Pizza here. So like, this should be really up my alley. Antonio raising his hand.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Do you think there's a world where he could do like a Frank Pepe's, like a white clam pie, and that does well, or is the open flame just kind of taking that out of the equation?
Wasn't that what Brian was talking about at first when he was sort of over speaking everything, where he was like, like a clam pie, let's do it. Blah, blah, blah. Like, yes.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, now we're skipping to the elimination, but I think that's fine. We can just talk all this stuff through.
No order here. We live in a land of chaos.
I don't know. Maybe people aren't going to like it. I'm having a really good time.
Whatever. People are going to listen anyway. Whatever.
I think Sasto talks about it, right? Like, his issue is editing. He can't edit himself. He doesn't know how to do it. But like, there was just like, it was just too convoluted. And I think, Antonio, you're absolutely right. I think that there is a very tried and true way of doing a seafood pizza that like you can riff on to a certain degree, but don't look any further away than the master. The Frank Pepe style clam pie that is emulated nationwide, from various different establishments.
From sea to shining sea.
From sea to shining sea. That's not G.I. Joe. Antonio, what there's a place near you that you had sent me a screenshot of a menu that was like that's like a New Haven style pizza place in Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, I mean it's everywhere, and yeah. That it's just that's why I thought that what he would be interested to do was something like that.
A good flavor profile. It's like, you know, fire roasted clams, bacon. Who doesn't like bacon? You know, it's very buttery. It's lemony if you do it right. It's got parsley. Parsley's dope. All of these things. That's another hashtag. Parsley's dope. They marry together so well. And like, that is something that like, you're not tempted to like put more stuff with the flatbread. But I think that the construction of the Malarkey squad, the way that they like presented all their stuff, made it seem like they wanted everything to like mix and mingle together. So like the flatbread was going to be like some sort of like scoopy vessel for everything else.
Yeah, I'm not speaking from experience here, but you can get in trouble in high school for convincing classmates that parsley is dope, actually.
Yikes.
Oregano works a lot better. You're right. I do. Remember when we had high schools? Yeah. I do.
Remember when we got to leave our house?
No,
too soon.
We must laugh or else we cry.
I definitely thought.
Why not both, Joshua?
Well, let's not cry on the podcast. Let's save that for afterwards.
I'll cry during the commercial break, as usual. I definitely thought of you, Josh, with that white clam. I thought that reminds me of Josh. I thought there's
white clam your nickname in a
resident white clam.
I thought there's a world where he does this well, and it actually pops. But it just seemed like he overloaded it, and it also seemed like there was a general construction issue with how they served everything. Like, you're putting it all on one plate at the table. And it's so like a couple of these dishes were like really thin sauces and they mixed with that flatbread and that didn't go well.
My mental image of it was like this flatbread was almost like creased or folded in such a way that directly funneled sauce onto like all of Leanne's dish. And like, yeah, there was like a huge family style issue with the sauce and this. And don't get me started on the funnel. But I think it's like, you know, no coincidence, or maybe it is completely coincidence that like looking at our, you know, spreadsheet of all the dishes, the two dishes with the longest names are also the bottom two. So I think that's a little hint to the chefs to add forward.
Interesting. Yeah, I think
edit.
That's a
good point. Hit the edit button.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, poor Leanne's fish was just like burned to shit. And she's put crispy stuff on top of it. No one will know.
She came off as saying, you know, I'm so familiar and comfortable cooking fire, so it's surprising that she wasn't like, oh yeah, let me brush a little oil on this grill prior to throwing my fish down, which any fish you ever cook is super delicate with skin. Like, come on. Like, if it's in a frying pan, if it's anywhere, like, you have to be able to flip that properly, and like, you always need something well seasoned.
And then following that, the basic chemistry of the oil directly on the fire.
Right, yeah.
It seemed to me, and I think this is what you hear from a lot of people that have been on the show, people that have been on this podcast that have talked about it. Just you can get in your own head so quickly on Top Chef. You can get in that Top Chef kitchen. You can screw up a quick fire, and then you can start chasing it. You can really start second guessing yourself. You start making rookie mistakes. Clearly those are things that Leanne knows in terms of the oil on the fire, in terms of seasoning the grill. Like, these are things that she knows. And yet you could second guess yourself. Our own Jessica Lise here from Reality TV Rehap Ups and so many podcasts that we've all done with her in the past talks about this as a quote, five hole challenge when she talks about the Amazing Race. And that is when a contestant is presented with something that they are really skilled at. And that's the challenge. And yet it can really cause them to second guess it. You've had hockey players in the Amazing Race go out and fail to get hockey pucks in a net when other people who are not hockey players did really well. So you can just really get in your own head because it's just so big of a target. And it seems so perfect for you to do that you can really screw it up. And I can imagine very easily how to do that. And I can also imagine how easy it would be to do that with the panel of judges they had at this table. Jamie referred to it as a finale panel. Amy or Emily, did anything jump out to you about any of these specific judges that were really people that popped?
You finally got Josiah. That was nice.
Hosea?
How do I spell his name? No, I think... if you were somebody who had to literally present the dish you just cooked under such duress, right? Like, it's hot outside, you're working over a flame, and you're talking about Californian cuisine, and then you look at all of those judges, I mean, I would have probably passed out. Like, you have Nancy Silverton, you have like everybody who is known for that particular, you know, style for the most part.
Nancy Silverton, a dangerous person to be serving flatbread too. Like, yeah, you really like, got to bring your flatbread game. She's serving up some of the very best pizza in Los Angeles.
Totally. And she went rusty with seafood.
Yeah, you have Jeremiah Tower, you have like Marcus Samuelson.
Marcus Samuelson, can we take a minute to talk about how amazing he looks?
He's delightful. Yeah, I've worked with him in the past.
Marcus Samuelson,
serving like, him wine, and he's so lovely.
Marcus Samuelson like looked like somebody that like James Bond meets for information like a quarter of the way into a movie. Like, he had like this incredible hat. His shirt was like wide open, so showing some chest. He just was like loving the beach life. Marcus Samuelson, best dressed of the episode, and it's not even close.
He's got a new project out, the R Harlem project that's out that I really have been wanting to check out. I downloaded the audiobook and I just haven't been able to get to a point where I can listen to it yet. But I find that dude fascinating and loved him on the show. Definitely loved the look.
He just looked fantastic. Haley, did you have any comments on Marcus Samuelson's attire at the table?
I just love everything about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, and those who want more Marcus, like he and Nancy, I believe, are regular judges on, was it the, what's the tournament show again?
The Tournament of Champions, which I always want to call the Tournament of Champions by husband.
Doughboys, baby. Shout out Doughboys.
He's a delight on there as well.
He's a delight on every single thing he's ever been. One of my favorite episodes of Marcus Samuelson content is like, there was this show a couple years ago and I don't remember the name of it. And I think there was only like 3 or 4 episodes, and it's when celebrities went in the kitchens of famous chefs and like cooked with them, and Mindy Kaling went to Red Rooster and cooked with Marcus Samuelson. I think like Allison Hannigan or Kristen Bell or something cooked with one of the Voltaggio brothers. Amazing. Anyways, magical show. Can someone remind me what that's called?
No idea, but I do remember Marcus.
Not you. No, I'm saying it to the void.
Yeah, the void.
Remind me what I'm talking
void.
About.
Tell Haley remember. What she's talking about. Marcus Samuelson, I believe, was the first one out of the Next Iron Chef competition.
Spoiler alert, I have not seen that.
This is like from, you know, a decade ago at this point. So the moratorium.
Star Plates?
We're past that. Star Plates, is that the name of the show? Star Plates?
Star Plates, it looks like it, yeah.
Star Plates.
I think Antonio and I were like Googling in the background, I think, and
no, yeah, I was trying to reach into the ether and pull it out.
That was more impressive.
I wasn't Googling anything.
You divined that shit.
We all loved Marcus Samuelson, but I thought Jeremiah Tower was a dick when he told Leanne to swim home. Yeah. That was a punk move. I did not like that one bit. And even the people at the table, Gail and Pamela, were like, it's a long way to Hawaii, okay? Like, don't be a dick. Like,
we've already made her cook in 4 feet of snow while pregnant. Let's not make her swim.
Exactly. Pack your knives and swim. No thanks.
I liked Nilu, but God, did I miss Gail.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about the return of Gail.
Welcome back, Gail. And I love that they gave her a moment where they're like, Gail, welcome back. Because everyone at home is like, Gail, yes! Oh, my God. This was something that Chef Colicchio talked about in the interview we did, where he was like,
I'm glad Gail's back.
Well, he didn't say that. He did not say that specifically, but he did say that, like, yeah, Top Chef coming back right now is well-timed because it's at a time where, like, people really need reminders of like how vital the restaurant industry is and how vital the food industry is and everything like that, as we're, you know, in such danger of losing so much right now. But it's not just that. It's the fact that like there are so many familiar faces now on our TV right now that as we're in a place where, you know, we're seeing less and less of our familiar faces just in our life, to have people in our home who we recognize even just on television is a really soothing thing. And I, you know, I felt that way to a certain degree about, you know, many of the contestants. But as we've discussed, like there are some that like are just a little over my head in terms of my memory. But like Gail is family, you know, like to see Gail back, it felt great. It just felt great to see her back on the show. And I'm so stoked that we're going to have her here, you know, hopefully every single week.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It's going to be nice. It felt like the band was back together.
Yeah,
like
for sure. And Nilou's doing the What Would Tom Do show, and she's great on it. So, you know, if you like your Nilou content, we got it.
I know, Josh, you asked Haley to evaluate Marcus Samuelson's sartorial choices. Haley, would you like to comment on Gregory's leather jacket?
Gregory does something to me. His sexiest shaft is well deserved. I big fan of his style. I love his tortoiseshell glasses. He's, gosh, I don't know, something about that guy, you know?
Something about that guy. I really enjoyed the fact that he has always struck me as like someone from another planet. And I thought the same thing about Angelo. And the fact that those two are buddies now, and they're like cooking next to each other in the mise en place, they're doing their prep. They just seem like good friends. I can't ask for much more than these two goofballs yucking it up all season long. I hope they're both around a while for them to do that. So I really enjoyed the leather jacket. What a look. He's just, that's his confessional look. What's on the bottom is what I want to know. Where is it? Is it like a Rock'em look in this season of
just like fishnet tights?
Like, yeah, I want to know if that's,
I was thinking like maybe like Ross style leather pants.
But he can't get off.
Ross is wearing leather pants.
Yeah. He's got a lot of powder on to make sure he can get them on and off.
Something else I wanted to.
The water has created a paste.
Yeah. Ew. That's for a future challenge. Yeah.
The water has created a paste. That's something, it sounds like something Tom might say. Tom also said, when the sun is shining on the tops of your feet, it's always a beautiful day. Can we unpack that a little bit? Is that the case? Is that true?
When the sun is shining on the tops of your feet,
yeah. Why the
sunburn? You get a sunburn. No,
why the tops?
Suntan.
I think if I can unpack that, I believe he's saying like if it's sunny out and you're in a position where you can be walking around somewhere barefoot, then odds are you're having a good day.
Or if you're stranded on a deserted island and you don't have shoes and you've got no hope of rescue, even if it's a beautiful day outside, it's probably alarming that you're stuck on a deserted island.
Wilson!
Yeah. Let's get Tom's feet and Brian's face some sunblock.
Gregory is the winner of the challenge. The charred salmon with grilled peaches and the chili dressing. I would like to eat it.
Me too.
That's the comment. That's it.
That's the comment.
That's my assessment of the win. I would like to eat it. It sounded delicious. It looked delicious. I'm a big fan of the savory with the sweet. You mix the salty and the sweet. It's a nice treat. So salmon with the grilled peach. Good call.
That's a much better maxim than when the sun is shining on the tops of your feet. That's always a beautiful day. I like salty and sweet. It's always a nice treat or whatever you said.
I like the flavor profile, but gosh, the way you just put it together is.
It didn't feel good.
Off.
You don't want to eat that at all.
Salty and sweet.
No.
Nice treat. Yeah, I thought it was really, I thought one of the kind of ingenious things that Gregory did, he had charred ingredients, grilled ingredients, and roasted ingredients. So he used that fire in a lot of different ways. There were other chefs, of course, who were accused of not using the fire enough or for not using what was there to prep their dish. Some people seem like they got away with it. Like Tom liked Lisa's ceviche, and I can't for the life of me, at least on the first watch through and really not paying attention, I was trying to figure out like where the fire was in that.
Did she go anywhere near the grill for that?
Yeah, but it didn't seem to matter because it was a really well-executed dish. But for others, he was dinging them. Like, oh, well, all you did for the fire and this was just do one thing? Come on, it's not there. But in Gregory's, not only was the flavor profile aces, but he had charred, grilled, and roasted ingredients. I thought that was a really savvy thing for him to do and a really thought out use of what was given to them in the challenge. So full marks all the way around for sure.
Full Marcuses all the way around.
Full Marcuses all the way around.
Well, he did eat a lot, so that's very possible. And let's talk about like, you know, was it Melissa who put the radicchio like right into the embers of,
it was.
Of the fire? And that seemed to go over well with the judges too. So like interesting use of the fire. And I guess it's like, and I think it's like the seafood was supposed to be the star of this challenge, and maybe the fire, the judges were more, this is your limitation versus a core component that you have to employ. So maybe, you know, that's why, you know, we didn't get much talk about Lisa's, you know, ceviche, and or some of the other like potential raw ingredients. But I was really impressed by not just Melissa's choice to do that, but also, you know, it paid out in the end. You know, she actually got kudos for it. And so I was glad to see that.
It's when chutzpah works out for you.
Yeah, overwhelming chutzpah.
Yeah. That
I don't find Melissa's chutzpah overwhelming, though.
No.
It's a very calm chutzpah.
It's very measured. She's a Libra. She's a Libra.
Yeah.
The balance.
Why I picked her.
Yeah.
Our Libra queen.
Yeah.
We stand. We stand. We have no choice but to stand.
No choice.
No choice.
There was really no question that it was going to be the Sasto squad on the bottom here, right? Like, there was not a lot of drama.
Everyone, like, every team seemed to have, like, one thing just, like, a scoochity scooch off. But it felt like...
Very technical
term. Yeah, the Sasto team was just, like, a car wreck and... every way. It's the editing just led me to believe, like, oh, these people are just not in for a great time when it comes to the judging panel.
Yeah, so like I thought that like maybe some of the drama was gone because I think that they were like the second or the third team to serve, and like they just did so badly that like everybody else, even though they had like some dings against them as they were going in the judges table, like none of them were bad enough to surpass the Sasto squad. So it was like, it was pretty clear to me. I was pretty depressed for the rest of the episode too. It was like, oh, both Joe and Leanne were the ones that sucked. So I'm losing someone for sure. I don't like to lose.
Said the white clam.
Said the white clam.
Yeah, I wasn't obviously Kevin and Angela being on my team. I was a little concerned because both of them in their teams did not seem to deliver. But it really was clear that the red team across the board had more issues, and so they were going to end up on the bottom. So it was pretty clear, like you're saying, Josh, who was more in jeopardy and who wasn't. And it was also clear that Brian was probably going to be safe, that his dish was at least liked enough compared to the other two that he probably wasn't going to go home. He wasn't a team captain. They weren't assigning any real responsibility to the team captains like they often do anyway. And so there was never really any question that it was going to be one of these two. I did have some question as to which one of the two it was going to be. Would they send Leanne home for what was called a rookie mistake? Throw her in the ocean. Send her back home like a ship in a bottle, or no, like a message in a bottle. Yeah, I thought maybe that it would be her, honestly.
I thought for sure it was going to be Leanne.
Yeah. What really jumped out to you is the... Haley, why do you think they decided what they decided, ultimately?
I don't know. Just... I think it was an execution error on Joe's part where he just put a bunch of soggy ingredients on a flatbread, and it's just... That's hard to overlook. I don't know. Like, I feel like you can make an argument for either of them going home. And because we got so little from Joe in the episode, I thought, well, like, we've gotten some Leanne content. She must be the one going home. But that was just not the case. I love Leanne, and I didn't want her to go home, but I thought she made bigger mistakes than Joe did.
I think maybe the moment that Joe described his food ingredients as glue to hold stuff together.
Yeah, that's not great.
Tom hit the brakes on that. It's like, okay, never describe food as glue.
Yeah. I also think that like when you look at the professional shot of everyone's dish individually, I the second time around looked at Joe's and was like, oh, whoa, like that does not look good. Like it's just laden with aioli. Like there's just like a layer completely all over that thing.
It's a glue.
Yeah. Like I was like, no bueno, this isn't going to work out.
Laden with the aioli is an awful sounding term.
Yeah. Especially for me. I can't. Ugh.
And it sounded like it was the liquids from the halibut and the, you know, ceviche that potentially,
commingled.
And at that point, like, you know, take into account, like, you know, what are the other two dishes? How are the other two dishes? Will they negatively impact mine? If so, let's, you know, we're going to have to potentially change something on my end. So,
yeah, no, not good.
Yeah. Antonio, with Kevin being your boy, and his dish not being well received, can you unpack that a little bit? Did you have any thoughts on what he had made? It seemed like everybody agreed that it looked inviting, but it just didn't coalesce.
First of all, it's a crime that he wasn't considered one of the sexiest chefs. I'm going to have to talk to somebody about that. Yeah. But second of all, or secondly, or however it be, Roman numeral 2 Yeah, he drafted Jen Carroll specifically in his talking head saying, you draft Jen Carroll if you want a seafood challenge. She knows what she's doing. And he's right about that. She tells him, I'm a little worried your swordfish is going to dry out. And then he hammers the shit out of it. So I don't know. It seemed like his composition, the way he described his dish, which is always a note about Kevin, the way he talks about food is just something that really popped during his season that Padma has talked about just a lot throughout the aftermath of his season, how much she enjoys hearing Kevin talk about his food, the way he introduces his dish, the way it looks, it all sounds great. It just fails to come together in part because the centerpiece was hammered. And that's the note he gets. Look, I don't think this is going to continue to be a problem for Kevin. I think he knows what he's doing, but this was not ultimately the best start for him. And it was disappointing. I think no one was more disappointed than Kevin, I'm sure. I did have a huge laugh at his line about the judges table. The resurrected Christ will be back to judge your food. Like that level of panel was really funny. So not the best premiere episode for Kevin, but on the other hand, he and Brian did win the quickfire with their dish for their team. So ups and downs. And the team that he picked and chose, I think, did really pretty well without him. So seems like he's got his alignment in the right place. And I think he'll be good going forward.
I don't know. Anything else? What else we got?
How about the house that they're living in the Hollywood Hills? We talked about the bunk beds.
It's so huge. So why is there bunk beds? Every single person could have their own bedroom and it's fine. No doubt.
People could be sleeping out on that patio.
Oh my gosh.
Unbelievable house. Unbelievable house.
You sleep on the patio
box? They got a trundle there? Yeah,
patio little, trundles.
Little patio trundle, yeah. Everybody loves a patio trundle.
They have like a patio that tucks underneath the patio. It's stacked patios that goes out on rails.
It's patios all the way down.
Yeah, it's patios all the way to the ocean.
Literally.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So the patios from Laurel Canyon all the way to the Oscars, to the Dolby Theater.
How about the Top Chef kitchen? Brian remarked on what an upgrade it was from his season, but I think this is an upgrade even from recent seasons.
Looks good. Yeah. Looks good. It looks like they've got everything they could possibly need.
Except for more fryer space, apparently.
Yeah. So if there's like a big fry food, if there's like the fry challenge, the quick fry challenge.
Do we attribute that to the fact that it's LA and they just have more space that they're used to renting out and sort of having available for something like this?
Maybe. Maybe.
Definitely a good possibility. The prize is also bigger. It's $225,000. So maybe they just amped up everything. We got our typical Brooke Williamson commercial in the U.S. airings of this show. But instead of just Brooke, we have a whole family now. Brooke's whole family was in the commercial. So everything is supersized now.
Yeah.
Thought that was great.
Our weekly dose of Brooke. Always a blast. Yeah. Got to reach out to Brooke, see if she wants to talk about any of this stuff.
And no Last Chance Kitchen this episode. We'll probably see it next week. It probably would have been a challenge involving either seafood or fire or both.
Yeah. And I think we can safely assume
white clam.
Although no, if it was, but usually it's not necessarily a twist on the challenge, but a twist on what the person got wrong. So maybe if this was Joe and it could have been a flatbread challenge or, you know, compose a flatbread that has a liquid element to it.
Make a flatbread smoothie. Yeah.
Exactly.
Make a flatbread spherical.
A flat ball. It would probably be something with edit yourself, I think. I mean, considering that's
like
the note he went out on.
Use three ingredients in a
exactly.
dish or something?
Yeah, use three ingredients in a flatbread or four or whatever. Or use 10. And who has the best one with the most ingredients? I mean, it would probably be something to that effect, I would imagine. Yeah. We had a lot of herbs. And I know, Kurt, this is not going to be underreported. You can't stand the fennel. There were a lot of dishes with fennel. It jumped out to me. Do you think this is going to be constant throughout the season? Is it going to be fennel panic for you?
Panic.
You know what? It's panic. For some reason, it's like one of the standbys that I don't know if somebody on the Top Chef staff is like, you know, backed by big fennel, but it seems to be
big fennel, my high school nickname.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think even appeared as early as in the quick fire. So I think we saw at least three dishes that included fennel either in the on-screen description or in the verbal description that the chefs gave. So I'm on fennel watch right now, and you guys will just have to check in on me.
Okay.
Right. Did you take the end of the episode, Padma saying, "Oh, you had a rough day.
Oh, yeah.
Your next challenge starts now." Is that a joke or not?
I don't think so. I think they're going right. It sounds like they're going right into their, because it wasn't your next, like she used the phrase, I believe, elimination challenge. It sounds like they're going right into another elimination challenge. I don't know if that is true. Potentially that means there is no quick fire.
Restaurant Wars, episode 2.
Oh my God. Can you imagine?
What a nightmare.
Well, 14 people, they wouldn't at 14. There's just
7
no
and 7?
7,
That's too big of a team.
I'd be pretty upset about that. Because
your next challenge, remove Joe Sasto's bunk bed.
Yeah.
Disassemble.
Then remove his mustache.
Joe's bunk bed. Turn it into a trundle.
with an Allen wrench.
I think to toss them right into the next challenge feels like a very All-Stars type of season type of move. Like not even just for Top Chef, just like reality TV.
First we chose sea, now we choose land.
Yeah.
Next, Josh, air. We get your triumvirate.
Oh my God, I'm ready for it. No, so we'll see. I mean, I think that sets up a pretty action-packed episode 2. Looking forward to that. Just throw us right into it.
And I'm purposely avoiding the previews for the next
episode. I did as well.
They are infamous for spoiling stuff. So
I didn't avoid it,
but I'm dumb, so.
Well, I'm not watching them. I'm avoiding the previews. I do think that they can often reveal too much, so. Steering clear.
Haley, go ahead. I was going to ask you if you got the full episode.
I did.
Through
because
magic.
I watched it in another place.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I do believe, because I set a series recording for it on my DVR, it was only 1 hour, so I don't think it would have been the full episode. So I think I want to go back and watch it for a third time and see what was missing.
I think the Canadian report would be great to have standing updates throughout the season.
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah,
I do miss that moment in every podcast where Haley is like, "What?
You guys are making this up."
Overreported.
Haley, what do you think about this scene? I don't know. It wasn't aired here.
Yeah, it got caught at the border.
Yeah, but also it aired. Top Chef Hour airs at 10 p.m. Eastern here, which is an hour later than it airs for you guys. So, like,
it airs 10 p.m.
Oh, does it? For a while? Yeah. Oh, you know what? I think last year, halfway through the season, it switched.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That does sound familiar, actually.
Why did it do that? It's such a late show. Why 10 p.m.?
I don't know.
Lower. And I also get it 10 p.m. Pacific, so I have to avoid spoilers.
Yeah.
Unless, like, I find other means to watch.
I will say, in Canada, if you're in Canada, get the Hey You app, because they have the full episodes of Top Chef as aired in the States on the app. Great app. Big fan. Not sponsored. Hey You, please call me.
Ooh. All right. Emily's honking my nose, which signals that perhaps it's time to wrap up.
Wow.
I mean, listen, you guys all watched it on the video. Talk just to the host. Yeah,
marriage seems fun.
Marriage.
I'm surprisingly having a good time with this guy, considering we haven't seen anybody else in the flesh for a really long time.
You got cats. You want cat content? Hit up at Rand Howard.
You know I want cat content.
On Instagram. God, so many, we got your quarantine cats on lock.
If you looked at James Corden, my phone, it would be all cats.
James Corden-teen. At some point, Emily, we really do have to watch Cats and probably do some sort of something. Anyway, I don't think I've got anything else to contribute to Top Chef Land.
I think that's it. So
it was fun. It was great.
This
was
great. Yeah. What a good way to spend our Saturday morning.
I like doing the rambly thing. I thought this was good.
Yeah, I think so. And if you want more rambly content from us, Kurt, where can people find you on the internet?
I am at Kurt Clark with 2 C's on all of your major and minor social media platforms. Hit me up on Untappd if you want to share with what beers you're drinking.
Technically, aren't there? never mind.
Yes. Never mind. When we get done recording, tell me what you're going to say.
No, don't worry about it. Don't worry.
Kurt Clark, is that 2 C's with 1 R?
2 R's. But in different places.
Yeah, that's right. My bad. 2 C's, 2 R's.
Got it. 2 C's. Antonio, where can people find you on the internet?
I am at AC Mazzaro with 2 Z's and 1 R.
Oh.
There you go. Joshua?
I'm at Round Howard, like Ron Howard, but Ron, I did it. Emily, who are you?
I'm Josh, that's my job. Emily, yeah. Where can people find you? Yeah.
Excuse me. Don't mansplain Haley's role.
So sorry.
Thank you, Haley. For those of you who do not follow me, I am at Emilet, which is like an omelet, but with an E, and it's spelled the French way.
I was just going to ask.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @8strong_. Yesterday, I made some 2-ingredient bagels, so that's up
they
on my feed.
Great. Currently. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Was one of the ingredients bagel?
Yeah. So I'm actually I'm actually not a big bagel person. I know that's blasphemy. I think that's my hottest food take. Because I find them too thick and too dense. So I wanted to try these out. And I thought they were pretty good because I could make them as thin as I want. What does your mug say?
It's a bagel? Bagel mug.
It's a bagel.
It's a bagel. So it's technically a 2-ingredient bagel, but it's not because I had to make my own self-rising flour. Mix it with Greek yogurt. I didn't have that, so I used Icelandic skyr yogurt instead.
Oh, that'll work.
And I had some Trader Joe's everything but the bagel seasoning. Just threw it on there. Super
magic
easy.
Magic powder. That's the stuff.
That's up on my feed. Ask me questions about that. My blog is strongtakes.ca. Check that out.
I think we'd be doing like the rotating, like what are we cooking right now? Because so many of us are cooking.
I agree.
Kurt, what do you got? What are you doing?
I'd hit up the local Whole Foods for my groceries, and I got some of their deli area, their lemon rosemary chicken breast. But I diced it up and heated it up with some buffalo cauliflower, and I threw it in a wrap with some blue cheese crumbles and sriracha. It was very tasty. That's probably gonna be my lunch today. I've got some more of that.
Extremely my thing. Mm-hmm. Uncle Tony, are you making anything good over there?
Last thing I made was some vodka sauce.
Yeah.
I thought you'd say vodka tonic.
Nope. That's what's in the mug.
I don't drink the vodka as much as I make it in sauce, I guess.
No,
that's
good.
Yeah, that's okay. That's perfectly acceptable.
Emily, I saw some incredible homemade pizza on your end. So you guys got the pizza oven. What's going on there?
Yeah, we have like a thing that's called like a pizza box that you put on top of your gas range.
We were going to buy it for like the people in our building. We were going to have because we have a grill as part of
outside that everyone can use.
So we thought it was like a grill top pizza box, and we got the wrong one. It was like a gas stove top pizza box, and we're like, happy accident. Let's make pizza with it. So we've got.
We don't have to share it.
So Emily made the dough. What's the recipe? It was from a book.
It's from Mastering Pizza by Mark Guthrie. So he's like a Philly chef that's known for his pizza far and wide. And the crust came out really good.
It was really really good, and we topped it with just crushed tomatoes. We put that down. We put some shaved Parmesan directly on the sauce. We had some mozzarella
we had burrata
that we crumbled up like a mozzarella and put that on there. We had some sliced garlic that Emily sliced with a razor blade because that's the way you're supposed to do it.
I saw that and it was a little terrified. I'm not going to lie.
That's what she did.
I did it once and then I was like, and now I'll use a knife.
That's what so they did in the joint.
I mean, we are all locked up, so I figured why not be.
We put some leftover Parmesan, like sprinkled it on the crust before we did the bake, so there'd be a little bit of cheesy crust to the bread. Put some of that good EVOO and then slid it in and ate it. Sorry, that part sounded awful.
I did.
Slid it in and ate it. It was really good up until then. The quarantine pizza was quite good.
That's how you get heavy accidents.
Anyway, so that's what we made.
Yeah. I just want to add, please do not at me about the way I say bagel, okay? Please, let's not do that.
What? You know, live your life, Haley. Like, this
I'm
is
Canadian.
All we've got left, right?
I have
you
a
know?
Canadian accent. I can't go out today. I can't get on my roof. Like, I don't know what you want from me.
It's a bagel.
It's a bagel.
It's a bagel.
We're fine. We're all fine. Everyone's fine.
We're adults here.
Everybody's good. All
right. If you want to let us know what you've been quarantine cooking, send it to us. We all love food things.
Yeah, we do.
We'll catch you next time. I guess now you can pack your knives and head on out. That's what they say, right?
That's exactly what they say. Bye.